Welcome to this Chill Crisis Radio, and this is Webster Tarpley reporting to you from Washington, D.C. Let me mention right away that we're looking forward to meeting and greeting with various supporters of this program of the Tax Wall Street Party, of the United Front Against Austerity, and especially at the Left Forum, which is going to be held now in New York City next weekend. And if we look here in our notes, let's just remind you when and where these things are going to occur, or essentially when. The whole thing is, to the best of my knowledge, it's at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, sort of midtown on the west side. So let me just remind everybody, the Tax Wall Street Party is going to have four panels for you to attend on Saturday and also on Sunday. And Saturday is a full house. On Saturday, we're going to be starting off at noon, and our topic there is COINTELPRO 2016. That is to say, the infamous FBI and intelligence community program to actually take active measures to disrupt and destroy, if they can, various kinds of opposition political movements, and above all, to prevent the convergence of these movements, and they try to prevent the emergence of competent leadership. They're very happy to have all kinds of foundation-funded clowns out there, but not competent leaders. So that's, again, noon to 1:50 on the Saturday. Active measures of the post-9/11 national security state. We want to go back to the Church Committee and the Pike Committee and bring it down to the present day with the Stasi methods and the touchless torture, the surveillance role players, right? And especially the cyber trolling. So that's going to be from noon to 1:50. Then from 3:30 to 5:15, we have the destruction of the Republican Party as a national political force, and that is our agenda for U.S. political reform. Not ways to save the Republican Party, and not ways to reform the Republican Party, but how to make the Republican Party extinct as a national political force. Remember, they put Hastert the bastard, you know who I mean. They put Hastert two heartbeats away from the presidency. So a pedophile, a child molester, two heartbeats away from the Oval Office. That's the party that is saying, now let's put Trump, let's get his fat finger on the thermonuclear button where a madman can control the future of you and your family. No thanks. So therefore, come at 3:30 to 5:15, the destruction of the Republican Party as a national party, our agenda for U.S. political reform. Then, in the twilight on Saturday, 5:20 to 7:10, Trump, how to fight the rise of fascism in our time and indeed in our country. And what else could be more relevant? If fascism is taking aim at your country in your own time, you better get out there and fight it and call it by its name, fascism and Nazism. Don't go with this mealy-mouth stuff about, oh, he's xenophobic and he's misogynistic and he's racist. He is all that, obviously. But that won't cut the mustard. It is inadequate. So if you want to learn what is adequate and will be adequate, come to our forum there, 5:20 to 7:10, Trump, how to fight the rise of fascism in our time. Actually, the reemergence was the idea. So then again on Sunday, there is a truncated program on Sunday because they scatter early. But Sunday from 10 a.m. to 11:50 a.m., we're going to be doing a historical panel on Hamilton as a leftist. If you notice, take a look at the Tax Wall Street Party daily briefing that you can see at tarpley.net. You'll notice that we've paid attention to the career of Alexander Hamilton, and we want to prevent reactionary forces, monetarists, you know, supply siders, all of those people. Don't let them take over Hamilton and make him into some kind of reactionary or right winger, because he was not. He was the most progressive in terms of modernization, in terms of a rising standard of living, in terms of the abolition of slavery. He did not own slaves, and one of the leaders of the anti-slavery society in New York City. So the way you use Hamiltonian methods to defeat Wall Street and the moneyed power, because things have changed, obviously, but the Hamiltonian methods, which are, after all, then the methods of Henry Clay, Lincoln, and the American system, those are immediately applicable. So there you go. From Saturday at 3:30, Saturday at 5:20, and then Sunday at 10 a.m., please attend the various panels of the Tax Wall Street Party at the Left Forum in New York City. It's the largest gathering of sort of left opposition type forces, certainly in North America, and maybe somewhat beyond that. So that's us. We'll be there, and I'd be glad to meet you. If you have copies of my book you'd like to get inscribed, we can do all this stuff. We're happy to do it, at least within reason. But if there's time, certainly do come along and come to our events, right? We want to show that there is a realistic fighting alternative to the various, the forms of so-called dissent which receive encouragement from the media and above all from the foundation. So here we go. It's this coming Saturday and Sunday for us. It starts on May 20th. The official dates are May 20th to May 22nd. And it's at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. So that's the Left Forum. And I wanted to get that prominently displayed right off the bat. And we hope to see you there. Now, first of all, we've got to discuss what I would call the tale of two dictators. Now, it looks like the dictators are multiplying faster than we thought. Certainly when you look at something like the Trump phenomenon, you have to ask yourself, is that simply a U.S. phenomenon narrowly defined? Or does this not rather reflect an intelligence community strategy which goes beyond just the U.S., which extends much, much further, and which therefore kind of defines a new fascist era worldwide? Because I think that's what is happening. And in particular, the way we would start this is you look around the world and look for parallel lives, right? Suppose you're the modern Plutarch, right, sitting there at the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, because that's where he operated. Let's look at the question of, what's happening worldwide? In other words, are there forms of political development which seem to be concomitant with Trump? And, of course, there are. And the one that I wanted to stress first of all is the convergence between Erdogan, written again, Erdogan of Turkey, and Trump. Ask yourself, what aspiring dictators need terrorism in the period between now and the end of the year? And I think at the top of the list, you're going to have Trump and you're going to have Erdogan. And let's talk about that in just a minute. Welcome back to the Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So we'll see everybody at the Left Forum in New York City this coming Saturday and Sunday. We'll be leading off the Tax Wall Street Party four panels starting noon Saturday and stay around until noon on Sunday. That's all you have to do. Be there from noon to noon, Saturday to Sunday, and you'll catch us there. But now, the tale of two dictators. We've gotten more and more reports of activation of ISIS terror cells. And I guess what we saw in Baghdad this week with a rather large bomb killing, what, 60, 70, 80 people, that seems to signal a kind of terrorist offensive by ISIS, right? And that had been pre-announced. You'll remember that ISIS had put out all kinds of warnings late last year, December of last year, beginning of this year. Those have been in the daily briefing, that they're going to go on a rampage, right? Just this morning, for example, if you were listening, as I encourage you to, if you can, the National Public Radio Diane Rehm show, the international hour from 11 to noon Eastern, they were talking about the fact that, yes, indeed, this is – now, this is the tendentious kind of a line, but I don't stand behind this, but this is what they're saying. They're reporting that ISIS obviously is militarily not in good shape, right? ISIS not in good shape, and therefore – if ISIS has lost 40%, which I think is not a new figure, but if they have, and I think they have, lost 40% of their territory, then what are the implications for the ISIS terror activity? In other words, one thing is the Islamic State as a territorial entity, the caliphate, which is on the ground and which is under pressure on most fronts now, collapsing, contracting at least, what is that? What's the relation of that kind of activity to the international terrorism using small groups of terror commandos, suicide bombers, and so forth? And of course, the helpful people on National Public Radio reminded us that it's quite possible that out of weakness. ISIS weakness could force them to say, well, maybe we can't defend Mosul sometime in the next several months. But maybe they'll say, well, if we can't do that, then at least we should be able to have terror offensives elsewhere in the world. So check that. You can listen to that in the archive, right, on National Public Radio. But, of course, that then raises this very interesting question. For those of us who are in the know, and that includes our list here, you know that Erdogan is the de facto commander of ISIS. In other words, the true caliph, not the pretend caliph that you see, not al-Baghdadi and his farnetications, right, and his Rolex watch, but Erdogan is the true caliph. In other words, ISIS is a kind of an irregular force that he deploys towards Syria, but also elsewhere he can and does, in order to promote this idea of the new Ottoman Empire or the new Erdogan Empire. Maybe it's going to be that. So not Osman, but Erdogan is going to be the figurehead of this entire thing through all eternity. So Erdogan is Erdogan needs to launch some things in those directions, and we've heard all this, but so does Trump. Again, those Quinnipiac polls of the past week, and you know the ones I mean, that showed Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania practically neck and neck with Trump ahead in Ohio, I think it was. Those are shocking, but they are not necessarily conclusive. In other words, it's a very long time, and the methodology is a little bit strange. So therefore, these may not be reliable. By the way, anytime you see a Rasmussen poll, you can forget it, because Rasmussen is simply an arm of the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. Pure Republicans, right? Republican provocateurs. So don't believe a Rasmussen poll. But still, I'm saying Trump would be crazy, and above all, Trump's backers, as we'll see, Trump's backers, his commanders, his handlers, the people above and behind Trump, would be crazy to rely on something like the Rasmussen or the Quinnipiac at this early date. So therefore, as we've been arguing here now for some weeks, since the beginning of April, so over a period of about 6 weeks, give or take, we have been calling attention to the fact of this October surprise. And you recall that the October surprise is a terror event on the scale at least of Paris or Brussels, and it has to occur sometime in the September to October framework, right, taking into account early voting and other changes in the internal mechanics of U.S. elections. There's a grave danger because we have two ambitious dictatorial demagogues who would benefit, right? And when you look at terror events, first question you want to ask is cui bono, cui prodest, who benefits? The full Latin saying is cui prodest scelus is fecit. The one who benefits from the crime is the one who committed it, at least as a strong suspicion. So that is what we see. Now, we've been agitating about this, right? It's our public service duty to tell you about these things and to underline how dangerous all this is. And the awareness of it has been growing, right? We essentially suspected this, right, since the October surprise has been around since 1980, and since we had an October surprise attempted last cycle in Benghazi. And again, I have to tell that guy Slickums, right, that crazy Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, you've got to call Petraeus, General David Petraeus, and say you were the top of the CIA chain of command. Why didn't you order those CIA paramilitaries that were waiting nearby in the annex, right? We're told 20, 30 heavily armed people would have made a big difference. Would have made a very big difference. And they're, of course, you know, veterans, disciplined, hardened, all that stuff. That's one. And then the second, in terms of air support, well, that's General Carter Ham of Africa. Now, the last interview I heard with Trey Gowdy, he's finally talking about chain of command, and he actually mentioned Carter Ham. So let's see what happens. Back to the minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Starting here in Washington, D.C. So, are we witnessing the beginning of a worldwide trend towards fascist dictatorships based on cultural populism, as they have to be, and revolving around these megalomaniac personalities like Trump, like Erdogan, and quite possibly like the new guy in the Philippines, the new president of the Philippines, Duterte, D-U-T-E-R-T-E, Duterte, coming in, and the word on him, and we're putting the picture together, somehow that this is a guy who likes extrajudicial executions, and it's a little bit like saying, I want to punch him in the face. I want him to go out of here on a stretcher. Well, in the Philippines with Duterte, that seems to translate into, I want to execute them. In other words, his nickname, is the Punisher or the Executioner, right? Il Giustiziere is what I'm thinking. He wants extrajudicial killings. He's a strong man. Rodrigo Duterte, president of the Philippines. And his line is that the ruling elite is weak and ineffective. Well, we've seen that before, right? That's what Mussolini was spouting. That's what Hitler was spouting, that they're stupid, that they're cowardly, that they're passive, that they're incompetent, and on and on. And with Duterte, we even have some overtones of distributing the wealth. But now this is a very important question. But let's just try to stick to the tale of the two dictators, right? Trump and Erdogan. So let's just remind people, we have been campaigning on this, and we urge you to join us. We need people to talk this up. It's not a whispering campaign. It's a shouting campaign. It's a social media campaign. We want you on Twitter. We want you on Facebook. We want you on all the rest of them, right? Whether it's Snapchat or Instagram or whatever it is, get out there and talk about an October surprise. It's a grave danger. It could be in September, could be in October, from Labor Day to the election, something like that. And it's going to benefit Trump. Why is it going to benefit Trump? Because he's going to say, aha, I told you so. Look at that incompetent government. Look at those people, from Clapper to Ashton Carter to Loretta Lynch. All of these security people are stupid and losers, and they're incompetent. And look, now we have all these dead victims, all these dead Americans, and I'm indicting Obama and his lax gang, including Hillary, as being responsible. So therefore, elect me. Give me total power. And of course, as we've known since Plato and before, the call of the dictator for total power is the royal road to dictatorship, or the infernal road. So you'll remember on March 30th, Frank Luntz, the sophist and mind bender and manipulator, was quoted as saying in the Washington Post that if you have a terror event on the scale of Paris or Brussels, then that could change the race, obviously in favor of Trump, in ways that are unpredictable. Then a couple of weeks ago, we had Thomas Friedman on Meet the Press NBC with Chuck Todd, and Friedman says we could have some kind of terror event in September, October, could change the race in favor of Trump in totally unpredicted ways. We then had Brian Lehrer on WNYC, FM radio, New York City. Brian Lehrer talking to Mark Green. And unfortunately, when Brian Lehrer asked about this, instead of saying, yes, that's a very serious danger, Mark Green, I guess, decided that it was politic to say, no, no, it's not really a big deal. So that's unfortunate, but it is a big deal. I don't care what Mark Green says about it. I guess I've never cared what Mark Green says about these things. Then we also have Charlie Rose asking a correspondent from the New York Times recently now, what about an international incident? And she has a kind of a noncommittal answer. But now we've got Bill Maher and his significant audience of 4 million people. Now, it turns out this Bill Maher gets the honor and the pride of being first to denounce this danger in a kind of a panel discussion, as he does on his program. Bill Maher, if there's a terrorist attack within 2 months of the election, then it's President Donald Trump. So hats off to Bill Maher. This was apparently around the 11th of March. I think he records his program on Friday, whatever that Friday is. Let's just check for 1 second. Was it, in fact, March 11th? Yes, it was March 11th. So that puts Bill Maher out in front of Luntz and all the rest. So hats off. Anybody can acquire tremendous merits for civic courage and intelligence and just being on the side of humanity. If you come out and just denounce this as a danger, right? Obviously, we don't have a crystal ball. We can't be sure what's happening. But on the other hand, as somebody who's been looking at this for 50 years and somebody who wrote the book on the Aldo Moro assassination in 1978 and 9/11, from Aldo Moro to 9/11 to the present time, I would say this constellation of needs and powers and so forth, principalities even, means that you got to go to some kind of red alert as we get towards the election. And it could come sooner. It could be a series starting now and starting soon and going all the way to November. I don't think that you can say, well, I'll come back from the beach in September and then we'll worry about it. No, 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 no. So, there we have it. So once again, we need more people. If you know somebody, who is influential, somebody with a program, right? Somebody who can put something, European newspapers could do great yeoman service now, right? Let somebody in Europe come forward with this, right? That's another way to do it. Especially during the summer when things slow down, you can often get stories covered that are not, generally top priority for these papers. So you get the idea. So we have to worry, about this. This is a very, very serious, matter. The Bush gang thought about this. They did it to some extent, right? They would do things like call a terror alert to erase the convention bounce of Kerry or whatever it was. But now we're talking about more serious things. Now notice, guess who endorsed Trump this week? Dick Cheney. Can you believe that? After Trump went out and said, oh, they lied. Bush and Cheney lied. People died. Cheney now comes and endorses Trump. What does that mean? In terms of the normal soap opera stuff that Trump talks about, it's incomprehensible. Because how could Cheney embrace this person who's been slandering him as a liar and a reprobate and a, you know, bankrupter of the state and a jingo, warmonger. But nevertheless, he's supporting him for president. Cheney didn't have to do that. Nobody's waiting on Cheney to endorse anybody, right? He's retired, right? He's out there shooting his friends in the face, in the duck blinds. So this is very ominous, people. Very ominous. October surprise alert. Watch out for pro-Trump terrorism. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We're looking forward to seeing many of you in New York City at the Left Forum this coming Saturday, Sunday, from noon Saturday to noon Sunday. You can catch all the four panels of the Tax Wall Street Party with yours truly. Also attending, certainly attending all of them and probably having something to say. So please do, do come along, and maybe out of that we can get, a coordinated effort in New York City, to essentially prevent the Trump people from, riding roughshod, over the rest of the people. Now, the other thing we've got to talk about here is the vetting of Trump. And I think we have some interesting, concepts here. Principally, we had the unbelievably touted Ryan Trump meeting. Naturally, if you live here in Washington, D.C., and if you want to be a good parent, you have to tell your children, whether they be boys or girls, it doesn't matter. You got to say to them, there is that Republican club, the Dwight Eisenhower building, I guess they call it, on Capitol Hill. It's right across the street from the Library of Congress and diagonally across from one of the House office buildings. But that's the Republican Club. And you tell your daughter or your son, never go in there. Never, never, never. That's a den of iniquity beyond anybody's belief, right? Worse than Saudi Arabia, worse than the divan of Qatar or of Kuwait. No. So that's where they met. So Paul Ryan meets Trump. Now we're going to talk about Ryan in a minute, right? Ryan is putting the United States at risk. No money for Zika. No money for Puerto Rico. No aid for the Washington D.C. Metro, the subway here, which is approaching the point of thermodynamic breakdown. You risk your life when you go into the Washington subway. And this is the capital of the United States. If you wanted proof that the Republican Party needs to become extinct. There you have it, in the person of this John Birch Society austerity ghoul, Paul Ryan, this guy who wants to cut your entitlements, your Social Security, your Medicaid, and your Medicare, if you need that. He wants to shut all that down while, of course, giving tax cuts to his plutocratic, parasitical, predatory friends. So that's the one side. The other side, of course, is Trump. So let's talk about Trump, because this is a more immediate danger. As a presidential historian myself, right? So I've done books about Bush the Elder, and I've done two on Obama. So I am a presidential historian. Right? Don't wait for me to be invited to the Brookings Institution, though, because they don't see it that way. The question of mental illness and presidential candidates. This is a very weighty and very important matter. Let's just mention a couple of historical precursors before we get into the meat of the matter as we see it today. Presidential candidates and their mental health. It's a very sensitive subject, and there really are no clearly established guidelines or tests, right? The test for the presidency is you got to be 35, you got to be born in the U.S., and so forth. But then there are other questions, right? In 1972, George McGovern, unfortunately, made the mistake of choosing the very popular and, I guess, very likable Senator Eagleton, Senator Thomas Eagleton of Missouri, Democrat, who, it turned out, had been treated for depression in his personal life, and that he had been subjected to electroshock. And on that basis, Eagleton had to quit. He had to resign the Democratic ticket, and he was then replaced by Sergeant Shriver, the Kennedy family. Then, in 1988, it fell to me, quite frankly, to call the attention of the American public the fact that Michael Dukakis had undergone a severe depression after losing a campaign for re-election to governor of Massachusetts, and this was what his wife, Kitty, had described as a public death, that he sat for long hours in his office and looked at the ceiling and said nothing, never made a move. In other words, clinical depression. And, of course, it turned out that Kitty herself was a substance abuser. She had been using, I think, pain pills. So I guess the most famous leaflet in American history, written by yours truly, pointed out that Dukakis had this very severe problem. Reagan. Reagan was widely thought to suffer from dementia, from the onset of Alzheimer's disease, and from water on the brain, hydrocephaly, I guess it is. I can remember being in Rochester, Minnesota, the airport for the Mayo Clinic there, at a time when Reagan came into town after he had completed his term. This is 1989, when Reagan, I think in the early the spring or the summer of 1989, Reagan came into town and was operated on for water on the brain in Rochester, Minnesota, at the Mayo Clinic. Just recently, there has been an attempt by some people to call attention to this issue of Alzheimer's and related issues concerning the presidency. And that is, let's see, the key words would be Gary Sanchez, and above all, Will Ferrell, right? Will Ferrell, the comedian, right, veteran of Saturday Night Live and many, many movies. They were preparing to do a study of Ronald Reagan, right, the president, from the point of view of the question of Alzheimer's, right? Did Reagan suffer from dementia? So This was a guy who fell asleep during an audience with John Paul II in Rome, in the Vatican. It was somebody who kept claiming after the Iran-Contra story broke in 86 to 87, he kept claiming that he didn't know and that he still didn't know, and then that he couldn't believe it, but he sadly had to say, yes, we were trading arms for hostages, right? The antics of George Bush, Felix Rodriguez, and the infamous Colonel Oliver North and Fawn Hall, his assistant, right? All these legendary figures. So there was an outcry coming from the Reagan family to get rid of that, right? So Will Ferrell pulled out, and there will apparently not be this, movie, play, whatever it was, concerning the mental health of Reagan. Now, the one that I've also studied, other than Dukakis, was George H.W. Bush. Now, in George H.W. Bush, this is a very interesting problem, the thyroid. And you'll remember that the time that Bush regurgitated in the lap of the Japanese prime minister, and you'll remember this manic approach that he had to all kinds of everyday events, like the most obvious. Do a round of golf, and the people traveling, the press corps traveling Bush would say, he doesn't really approach it as a golf score, but as cart polo, and the goal is to do it as fast as you can, as fast as you can. I will be back in a minute on that as we continue towards Trump. Welcome to the second hour of World Crisis Radio, and let me repeat that we are looking forward to meeting a lot of you out there at the Left Forum, New York City, this Saturday through Sunday, as far as we're concerned. If you get there in time for a panel starting noon Saturday and stay through noon Sunday, you will have seen our four panels. Of course, there may be other things that you want to attend, but at least that core of those four key panels on COINTELPRO, on the extinction of the Republican Party, on the question of Trump fascism, and our eloge of Alexander Hamilton. And we want to defend Alexander Hamilton from his critics. We want to defend Alexander Hamilton from Andrew Jackson, who's a thug. We want to defend Alexander Hamilton from a bunch of right-wingers around the Lehrman Institute and the New York Historical Society who have tried to make him into some kind of right-winger. This is absolutely absurd. So four panels, noon Saturday to noon Sunday. See you there. Now, concerning George H.W. Bush and his mental health, this became this problem, as you know, in the last year that he was in office, during 1992, when Bush, again, regurgitated in the lap of the Japanese prime minister and was then put on a special diet and medication and so forth. And the issue then was his thyroid, and in particular, his manic approach, as I say, to playing golf. He called it, the press called it cart polo. The thing, his approach to it was, how do you do it fast, right? You got to get through 18 holes as fast as you can, and it doesn't really matter what the score is. I have a chapter at the end of my Bush biography, which talks about Operation Thyroid Storm, because Thyroid Storm was a way to look at his response to Saddam Hussein in Kuwait in 1990 to 1991, and his rage fits, his outbursts, his hissing, and other really manifest symptoms of mental instability, which somehow the press corps tried to avoid. Now, by the time it got to the case with the Japanese prime minister, it was clear that Bush was a sick man. And what you had then was an attempt to explain this as a less serious thyroid disorder, and that was called Graves' disease, G-R-A-V-E-S, or Graves, apostrophe. So there he is with Graves' disease. Now, this is unfortunately understating the difficulty that he had. What he had was actually Basedow's disorder, or you'll hear Basedow's disorder. So it's B-A-S-E-D-O-W, Basedow's syndrome, which is a rather severe thyroid problem, which often leads to the necessity of surgery to allow the patient to get back under control. And that's what Bush really had. Now, if you want to know about how this, you know, something like that could change world history as we build up towards Trump, I have here a very interesting book by the British historian Norman F. Dixon. It's called On the Psychology of Military Incompetence. And of course, you know, since Trump wants to be judged as a military figure too, he's the most militarist of all the candidates, he's told us, right? Because he attended New York Military Academy, which seemed to be a place where, you know, the faculty and the upperclassmen beat up the younger students, and that seemed to apply to Trump. And he took that's the sadomasochism of Trump, right? He took a grim satisfaction in going to that school and getting beaten up and then beating other people up. But if you look at the, look at the German offensive in the spring of 1918, after having knocked Russia out of the war, right, the Germans attempted to concentrate their forces in the west, on the Western Front, as much as they could, and to deal a crushing blow to the point where the British armies and the French armies met and succeeded to a significant degree. But here's the thing. We have a scholar by the name of Leitang, and his book talks about the hypothesis that some of the German problems of strategy actually derived from the fact that their commanding general, and that was theoretically von Hindenburg, but really Ludendorff was the one really doing it, that he was suffering from Basedow's syndrome. In other words, that he had an acute thyroid problem. It's called the pathology of leadership. Hugh Leitang, L'ATANG, British author, and Norman, obviously. So what he writes about it is this, as summed up by Dixon in The Psychology of Military Incompetence. Ludendorff, right, this was the real commander, right, we've talked about him. Ludendorff is somebody who did have Basedow's syndrome, and he had an operation, I think, after the war where, you know, he could have been corrected earlier if there'd been a surgeon willing to take on the case. But he did have this. He had Basedow's syndrome. So, according to Leitang, Ludendorff had been suffering from toxic goiter since 1914. The mental disturbance which results from this condition would have been quite enough to explain that indecision and constant change of plans which doomed to failure the German offensives of 1918, right? You know, Michel, and there was a series of large-scale offensives which almost broke through, but not quite. And here's a suggestion that if Ludendorff had not been suffering from Basedow's disease, then the Western Front might have caved in there in the spring of 1918. So this is a big deal. Right? This, if you get people like this with sickness, then it can immediately get to be very, very serious. And of course, all the more so in the nuclear age. So if anybody wants to get their big fat finger and their big yap anywhere near the thermonuclear launch codes and button, then we get to know everything. That's one of my rules. I've applied this. If you, as a candidate, want to get the thermonuclear button, it only applies to the president, maybe vice president. But if you want to get at or near the nuclear button, you must tell everything. Okay? I saw some correspondent interviewed Melania Trump, And she says, please respect the privacy of my family. Sorry, no way, no privacy. Because we're talking about our survival, our lives, world civilization. So we get to know everything, everything about you, every girlfriend, every partner she'd had, right? All that stuff, Trump. So we want to know. Now, if we take a look here, we will see that Trump has been exhibiting exacerbated syndromes and symptoms of mental disorder, really, since the time he was declared the undisputed. Well, of course, he's always disputed, but the undisputed candidate of the Republican Party, I guess. So he's really not even that. He's more and more unstable. He's switching from one position to another. We'll try to give you an overview of this. Back in a second on World Crisis Radio. Well, back to Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So we are looking at the question of the mental health of presidents and presidential candidates. And the ones that I know most about, Dukakis, on the one hand, was never president, but this was an issue. And I contributed to educating the public about this. We'll go through that another time. And then Bush, George H.W. Bush, suffering from Bazidov's disorder, Bazidov's disease, Morbus Bazidov, not Graves' disease. This is more serious, Bazidov says. So that was what was wrong with Bush. And that was why I thought the Iraq invasion or the Kuwait war that Bush had launched in 90 to 91 could indeed realistically be called Operation Thyroid Storm, because Thyroid Storm is what happens if you have Bazidovs and it's not treated. You go into rage fits, you lash out, and of course the big ingredient of tension is the thing that you're supposed to avoid, right? You're supposed to have a cool, uncluttered environment with light television viewing and some magazines and a few other things, but that's about it. Now, let's take a look at Trump. Because a number of things have combined for me this week to throw this problem into stark relief. It's unavoidable. What is the mental condition of one Donald J. Trump? Now, let's just look on the policy side. In the week now, since he was declared presumptive candidate, I think he is showing more instability, more erratic judgment, and more inability to stick to a policy, if that's possible. Trump has said that U.S. ships, if they are buzzed by Russian aircraft in international waters, should open fire on the Russians and shoot down their planes. Now, we know this stuff. This was the Cold War. It was done by submarines, and it was done by planes, and it was done a lot. And some people called it the Crazy Ivan. It's standard. It's not worth blowing the world up over. It's a trifling incident, ultimately, right? Planes flying over your ship, fine. They're professionals. So are you. Keep it under control. Don't end world civilization. Obviously, it would be better to create a better international atmosphere in which this would be less likely to occur, right? But we don't know what the U.S. does to Russian ships, right? So that they're not going to tell us. Maybe the Russians can. But we want to de-emphasize this whole thing. And here's Trump with his stupid yap. U.S. ships are being buzzed, so they have every right to shoot them down. Then, remember, Medicare, Trump tried to tranquilize the Mickeys and the Rubes by telling them, I'm going to preserve Medicare for you. This week, a spokesperson floated the idea of allowing cuts in Medicare. Now, of course, that may be a political nod to the austerity ghoul, Paul Ryan of the John Birch Society, former vice presidential candidate with Romney. Then on the ban on Muslims, how about this one? The ban on Muslims, says Trump, is just a suggestion. Just a suggestion. It's the ban on Muslims. It's one of your signature issues. And there are exceptions. He said, I've always said there would be exceptions, right? His business partners who are Muslims would be allowed to come in, right? The people from Qatar and Dubai, the Emirates of the Gulf are going to be warmly welcomed. So there's that. National default, U.S. national bankruptcy, defaulting on U.S. Treasury bonds. And he says, well, we can borrow a whole bunch of money at fairly low rates, rebuild the infrastructure, and if we still have a crash at the end of that, we could negotiate. In other words, a haircut, but a haircut is a default, right? If you don't pay everything, then you have defaulted. So he is open to a default on U.S. Treasury bonds, a negotiated debt write-down or haircut, if the economy fails to respond to a binge financed by borrowing. Now, then we also have with Trump, raise taxes on the wealthiest taxpayers. Yes, then no, and then yes, but then he says the wealthy taxpayers, what he meant at the end of all this, he has to say, what he actually meant was that he may not be able to cut them from the 25%. In other words, he may not be able to give them the full 15% off the top rate. He may have to make his tax cut less. And to him, that supposedly means raising taxes. Well, I'm sorry. Whom the gods would destroy, they first drive mad. Mad. So all the reactionaries are full of consternation. Now, you will remember, we've had a number of things like this. Concerning abortion, right? Remember the famous interview with Chris Matthews. Should there be a punishment for the woman? Yes, says Trump. And then there's a debate about how many times he changed that during the course of that week. Did he shift? Did he flip-flop? Did he have first yes, then no, then yes, then no? Or was it only three different positions? Did he have three positions or four on punishing women who receive or even seek abortions? I wish I could track this down. Maybe somebody wants to help me. There was one interview this past week, say, where Trump took three different positions on the same issue in the course of the same interview. That is, originally it's yes or no, then the opposite at the middle of the interview, and then drifting back towards the original one at the beginning. Now, what are we to make of this? How can, first of all, practical issue, how can you negotiate with such a person? Everything he says, as Dante would say, this is written with foam on the ocean or written with smoke in the air, right? It's impossible. It's like nailing jello to a wall. It's impossible. And now the question is this just the traditional sociopath, megalomaniac, sadist Trump? Or is this dementia? Is it dementia? Is it Alzheimer's disease? Alzheimer's disease. Let's look at this question in the remaining two segments of today's program. Alzheimer's or dementia? Trump. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. So you see what we've been doing, looking at this unbelievable pattern of instability, lability, flip-flopping, changing, and so forth. And then how that came together in this week after he supposedly got the nomination. Now, some people would say, wow, he's pivoting towards the center. He's trying to get some Democrats. But I think there's something here that's beyond it. Now, The other one that I thought was highly interesting is this character, obviously an enemy of Trump, is Mark Salter. Mark Salter, S-A-L-T-E-R, McCain speechwriter. Now, he gave an interview of about an hour to Politico, to Glenn Thrush of Politico, published on the 9th of May. And the word here is this is a declared enemy, of course, declared enemy of Trump. But he says not only is Trump unstable, but that he can melt. In other words, he can go to pieces. Right? He's going to lose. And I think he's got kind of an unstable personality to begin with. And this could then lead, I think he could come apart. I think he could come apart, you know, in some kind of visible way. I think that's quite possible. I'm not a psychiatrist, but there is something wrong with this guy. Now, I can hear all the libertarians, if we still have any here, and others say, well, yeah, but that's an enemy. Well, what are you going to do, right? All reports, any report you get, is either going to be from a pro-Trump source or an anti-Trump source, right? With Trump, it's not like there are that many neutrals. So you have to sort of, as a historian, you've got to somehow look at the internal coherence and, you know, can you make that mesh? Is it correlated to real evidence out there in the world? Now, all of that made me think, and I wrote it in my notebook last night, Thursday night. I wrote in big red grease pencil letters, Trump Alzheimer's, Trump Alzheimer's. This is now the working hypothesis. And then today I said, well, I better cover myself. I better see whether anybody has written about this. So you put in Trump and Alzheimer's. The first thing you find out, of course, is what I knew. His father died of Alzheimer's. Trump's father, Fred Trump, 1999, had Alzheimer's and died of it. So you have these questions, early onset Alzheimer's, or Trump is older than he looks. You may not get the idea, right? But the guy's almost 70, and this is getting an age, getting to be an age when Alzheimer's might indeed strike. So you look at him, he's had many, many bouts of plastic surgery. He's had plastic surgery to get his hair fixed up. Basically, every one of his features has benefited from the art of the plastic surgeon. And now we have to look at this stuff, right? Go back and look at all the flip-flops, right? The abortion series, the three positions in one interview series, and on and on, right? And we say, well, the other doesn't believe in anything. No, of course he doesn't. But the person who put it together, and let's give pride of place to this journalist whom I do not know, Sophia A. McLennan, McLennan of Salon Magazine, and she was the first out of the gate with this in April, if I can find the date, April 25th. Monday, April 25th. Maybe Donald Trump has really lost his mind. What if the GOP frontrunner isn't crazy, but simply not well? So, the campaigning in Pittsburgh, Trump said, how's Joe Paterno? Are we going to bring that back, right? How about that? How about the whole deal? Joe Paterno, of course, died in 2012, and his principal aide, Sandusky, has been in prison as a child molester. Apparently the Republicans have a weakness for such people. See Hastert, the bastard. Sean Hannity asks Trump, what government agencies would you shut down? Now, of course, this is the one that got Rick Perry. So Trump says, the Department of Environmental. The Department of Environmental. This was picked up by a couple of comedians, right? Stephen Colbert, I guess, is one. The department, it's called the Environmental Protection Agency, right? The Department of Environmental. Now, some people might say, well, that sounds like that quick, right? Maybe. But the problem is, the pattern is so much broader. Each, you often get a situation where there's a pattern, and a number of points in the pattern can be at least criticized and perhaps refuted. But the fact is, the pattern survives that kind of thing. You got to recruit them. You got to refute them all. Oh, at one point he says, didn't New York City do well on 7-11? 7-11. He meant 9-11, right? Rudy Giuliani should have been able to teach him that, right? You'd think that Giuliani could say that in his sleep. Let's see. Would you use – here's one to Trump. Editor of the Washington Post. This is actually very interesting, and this was published, and we read it all then, and we noted he's crazy. We were focusing on the policy, though, how crazy the policy was. Will you use a tactical nuclear weapon against ISIS, which I believe he referenced in his Washington foreign policy speech a while ago. So here's what Trump says. Trump, quote, I don't want to start the process of nuclear. Remember the one thing that everybody has said. I'm a counterpuncher. Rubio hit me. Bush hit me. When I said low energy, he's a low energy individual. He hit me first. I spent, by the way, he spent $18 million worth of negative ads on me. That's putting unintelligible. What? You're asked about nuclear weapons and ISIS. You don't want it, but then you go to Rubio and Bush. Ryan, this is a person on the in the Washington Post editorial board. Ryan says, this is not Paul, the Speaker of the House. This is some journalist. This is about ISIS. You would not use a tactical weapon against ISIS? Trump. Well, I'll tell you one thing. This is a very good-looking group of people here. Could I just go around so I know who the hell I'm talking to? My God. And when you look at this, and I must say, when you begin to look at that stupid red hat, from this point of view, doesn't he look like some elderly Alzheimer's victim who has been dressed up with a red hat, maybe to go out for a walk or on the golf course and so forth? So, Trump speak, says this interesting article in McLennan's article in Salon magazine. Some of this stuff we don't register anymore. It's a pattern of speech we've seen, and above all, Palin is the pioneer. But reread the exchange above. Register the range of nonsense. No basic grammar. Fractured syntax. Abrupt shift in topic. Disconnect from reality. Paranoia. Unable to answer, to even grasp the question, much less answer it. What if Palin is actually sick? I'm sorry, what if Trump is actually sick, right? Trump sick, not just Tea Party rhetoric a la Palin, but serious stuff. Now, let's get the guidelines. We have the Alzheimer's Association telling us how we can do a kind of quick layman's diagnosis. And we'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our final segment. We got to cover some territory here. So look, the Alzheimer's Association says if you have two of the following core mental functions that are impaired or seem to you to be impaired, then you should seek medical assistance. So these are memory. Like, can you remember that you took the same, that you took two different positions in the same half-hour interview? Do you remember that at all? Communication and language. Well, Trump speak. Ability to focus and pay attention. How's your attention span doing? Reasoning and judgment. Visual perception. Alzheimer's carries other symptoms besides memory loss. You can have long-term memory okay, newly acquired, newly learned information, short-term memory not good, that's bad, disorientation, mood and behavior changes. Are you going to have outbursts of rage, right, when you get that red face of Trump that's been photographed so many times? Deepening confusion about events, time, and place. unfounded suspicion about family, friends, and professional caregivers. And then you can get into really heavy-duty memory loss and behavior changes. So that seems to be that's the McLennan argument. Now, let's hear from the Trump side of the equation. If we get this this document called up in the London Daily they had it in the London Daily Mail, but here it is in National Public Radio. Okay, so in early December 2015, we have Dr. Jacob Bornstein, MD, who is the personal attending physician, right, to Trump. He says, I have been a personal physician to Donald J. Trump since 1980, and his previous physician was my father, Jacob Bornstein. Over the past 39 years, I'm pleased to report that Mr. Trump has had no significant medical problems. He has a recent complete medical examination that showed only positive results. His blood pressure is 110 over 65. This I have a hard time believing. Laboratory test results were astonishingly excellent. Now, when you get into that adjectival style, right, like huge or amazing or great, then you know this is a press release written for public relations purposes by Trump. Over the past 12 months, he's lost 15 pounds. He only takes a baby aspirin and a small amount of statin. His PSA is low, prostate-specific antigen. His physical strength and stamina are extraordinary. You hear that, ladies? His stamina is extraordinary. He has never suffered from cancer. He has never had a hip, a knee, or a shoulder replaced. No orthopedic surgery ever. Only an appendectomy at age 10. Cardiovascular excellent. No alcohol, no tobacco. And then the crowning sentence. If elected, Mr. Trump, I can state equivocally, will be the healthiest individual elected to the presidency. Come on. How do you know that? Are you a historian? How can you know that? You can't know that. It's ridiculous. This is hype. This is a press release dictated by Trump with his usual style. So let's not be fooled. Now, a couple of other things. When Trump is asked about his draft status, right? How did you get out of Vietnam, Trump? Because this was a big issue at the time. Believe you me, I know all about it. I know whereof I speak. So he said, I have these bone spurs. I can't remember which foot that I have the bone spurs, but that was enough to get me 4F and exempted from service. I did not have to be conscripted, mobilized, and sent to the front. Well, is there anything in here about that? This looks like this Dr. Bornstein doesn't know that Trump had bone spurs earlier. So what kind of stuff is that? The other one is, Trump says in one of his interviews, maybe it's a Howard Stern interview, he says, I fought my own personal Vietnam. His own personal Vietnam. What was that? Avoiding venereal disease in New York in the 70s and 80s. So he's trying to tell us no HIV positive, no AIDS, no sexually transmitted diseases, STDs. But there is a point at which these could mesh, as people know. Syphilis. If you have syphilis over decades, this can lead to dementia also. So I think we have a right to ask, what's with the STD story with Trump and possible syphilis and possible mental impairment on that point? His father died of Alzheimer's. How does he relate to Alzheimer's? He talked about his personal Vietnam. This is a strange expression, to be sure. So he's much older than he looks. The plastic surgery, the tanning, the hair club surgery, whatever he's had. Has he had the Biden treatment where hair is taken from one place and then put on your head? All of this has to be looked into. Some people might say, but how could he have syphilis with all that money he goes to doctors? Remember, Ronald Reagan was fairly rich, and it turned out that he had not had a colonoscopy for decades. And I remember, when was it, 1983, 1984, when Reagan had his first colonoscopy and an actual cancerous growth was removed during the colonoscopy. So all of that is relevant. Now, the other thing is, what do we want? We want to see serious medical records, not some hyped press release that he's the healthiest guy to ever run for president. That is just absurd. That's an insult to your intelligence. Now, what could he do? One of these sources says you can take something called the MMSE or Fallstein test. It is the mini mental state examination or Fallstein test, a 30-point questionnaire. I think this is the long form. A 30-point questionnaire that is used extensively in clinical and research settings to measure cognitive impairment. Does Trump have cognitive impairment? I think he well may. And it may be worse, right? Because there are other aspects of this that are worse, especially when you can't control the rage. Here, another interesting article comes from a site called Death and Taxes. Does Donald Trump Have Dementia? By Steve King. And remember, he's older than Hillary. He's older than Jeb. He's older than anybody except Bernie. And his father died of Alzheimer's disease in 1999. Recent studies have shown that Alzheimer's begins to impact the victims earlier than had been thought. And, well, this could then add up to a bad prognosis. Here's another thing. I know this is a little bit more controversial. According to the Harry Hurt the Third biography, Lost Tycoon. Here, let's see what Trump says at the beginning of the Lost Tycoon. Remember, F. Scott Fitzgerald had the Last Tycoon. Here we have the Lost Tycoon. Donald Trump told Glenn Plaskin of Playboy, "I've never met a successful man who wasn't neurotic. It's not a terrible thing. It's controlled neurosis. Controlled neurosis means having a tremendous energy level and an abundance of discontent, which is often visible." So apparently the insomnia, sleeping 4 hours a night, that seems to have been a permanent fixture. So that would not be a symptom that could necessarily be factored in to the current pattern. But something like bing, bing, bong, bong, right? One of, he says, if I pay off a politician, then bing, bing, bong, bong, I get what I want. That's one of his chants. Anyway, you get the idea. We demand the full medical records and mental health records of Donald J. Trump, otherwise Nick's presidency. And we will be investigating this more and more in coming weeks. So join us, help us, and see you at the Left Forum in New York City.